for tonight, I really wanted to focus our discussion on kind of two different areas: the basis for marketing our products, selling our products, and training, and why both are challenging for most people. Most people are still struggling with the sales side and with the training side, but for slightly different reasons, I think. But I want to address why both are challenging for most people and why both are absolutely essential for your success. There's just no way around it. So given that we all know I like words, we're going to look at the definition of sales and marketing. Sales is the exchange of goods or services for an amount of money or its equivalent. In this case, we don't want the equivalent, we want the money. It's also an opportunity. Marketing is an opportunity for selling, and it pertains to the activities involved in selling your goods or services. Now, marketing is more properly called the business of buying and selling. All right, and that's important for you to think about, that business aspect of what it is you're doing, and that's the reason why you have to develop a certain skill set to be effective in this particular area, because the fact that this is a business is the key behind your selling efforts. Now, business is something clearly that we know is a serious work or endeavor. That's the way the dictionary defines it. It's not something that just happens. We have to make a concentrated effort towards it. And remember when we had our call on the taxes and setting up your business entities, the reality is that the IRS, when you have a business on paper and you don't make money for X number of years, the IRS considers that a hobby. And when you reach that point, then the IRS will no longer allow you the business deductions that many of you are currently taking, because they're saying, well, I've looked at this person's returns for the last 5 years, and they're not even making an effort to make money. They don't realize that you maybe are making an effort, but it isn't showing as if you're really working a business. And part of that, I think, is because we're not yet achieving the levels of success we need to be achieving with the sales component. Because if you had significant success with just the sales aspect of what we're involved in, you would have a significantly different picture on your income tax returns. Again, look at Richard and Bruce in terms of the amount of retail that they're generating. If you look at Richard particularly, the level of retail, even if he wasn't building an organization, which he is, and a very solid one, if he wasn't, he would still have significant income that the Internal Revenue Service could consider a business income and not a hobby income. So one of the challenges, I think, for most of the things that we struggle with, it still gets back to an issue of belief. And sometimes when it comes to the sales piece, I look back at some of the information that you all have shared over this past period of time, and it seems that many of you are reluctant to sell your products because you're overly concerned with having the lowest price. When someone says to you, well, I saw some aloe perhaps in a store and they had a gallon for $5, how come ours costs so much more? It's not really about the low price. It is about the low price for you, though, if that's all you're focusing on and you don't really understand the value of sales and customers. Now, if you think about it, I was looking at this article by this woman, and she is referring to the difference between prospects and customers, and that if you're in front of the wrong prospect, it doesn't matter what you say. You could be an excellent consultant in terms of knowing what we have to offer with this business, but that's pretty much useless if you're not in front of a prospect that values that kind of expertise. Because there are people out there who simply focus on price. And when you understand sales a little better, you'll learn that there are pretty much two types of buyers, the transactional buyer and the value buyer. Okay, so transactional buyer is the person who thinks that the product that we offer or the service we provide is easily accessible. They can find it somewhere else with no problem. We sell aloe, they can find it at Walmart. They think that's all that counts. But when you're dealing with that kind of person, some of you are spending a lot of time trying to convince them that what you have to offer is better, and you're getting frustrated and you're getting discouraged in the process, and that's because you need to understand that the transactional buyer doesn't value your expertise. They decide solely on price. And to them, trusting in the product is more important than trusting in you. And it doesn't mean that the product is as good as yours at all. It just means that for that type of buyer, what you're trying to share with them is of no value. Whereas if you look at the value buyer, that person recognizes the difference. They appreciate your expertise. They trust the person over the product. What you have with transactional buyers and value buyers, transactional buyers are mass market buyers. But we're not in the mass market business. We're in the one-to-one marketing. And one-to-one marketing focuses on the value buyer. That's the person that we need to be seeking out to share our products and our services with. Because they are looking for a person who understands what they need and knows how to fix their problem, and they're willing to pay a premium for that expertise. Remember, we always say that what we're selling is a solution to someone's problem. So if they don't have a problem, then we don't have a solution. And we won't spend an inordinate amount of time with them after we discover that we don't have a solution to their problem. But one-to-one marketing, it's really important that you understand it doesn't work very well on a price-only buyer. And if you continue to do that, and many of you are doing a lot of that because of the level of feedback that I get from you tells me that you're constantly running up against people saying, well, I can find this cheaper somewhere else. Those people, you just have to let go. You simply have to move beyond them and put yourself in front of more value buyers, the people who are willing to pay for the one-to-one marketing aspect. And there are many of those people out there. And as we go through this call, we're going to talk about some of the ways that you can make sure that you retain those customers when you find them. Now, the other aspect I find to the challenge that you're having with sales is indeed having the proper skill set to work with that value-based prospect. So you're stuck, even if you're at the place where you can identify that I don't need to spend more time with this person because all they're concerned with is the price. Okay, so I have this person and they are a bit more interested in the value. But what do I do with that? How do I go to the next level? And so let's pretend you're in front of that prospect and they're still mentioning price a little, but most of that problem can be alleviated if you think about what you're doing from the beginning point when you're starting to engage the potential customer, okay? When you're setting your appointment, sometimes I hear you, actually I read it in your emails, where it seems like you're almost apologizing when you're setting up appointments. And I've actually been to some trainings where people will say things like, when you're calling on a prospect, you can say, you know, I know how busy you are. I'd just like to come by for about 20 minutes and show you something. Well, I want you to think about what you're saying in terms of how you're valuing the other person and devaluing yourself and what you have to offer. Okay? If I say to you, I know how busy you are, what does that say about me, that I'm not busy? That's the interpretation that I don't have anything going on. You're the one who's busy. But the reality is we're both professionals, therefore we're both busy. And if I say I want to come by for just 20 minutes, then I'm saying what I have to share with you isn't going to take any more time than that and doesn't deserve any more time than that. Now, think about this. If I'm working with a client who has a $100,000 legal problem and I say I'm only going to need 20 minutes to talk to them about it, what is that saying? It's really setting up a pretty low level of expectations, and low expectations on two ends. Low expectations for what we're going to talk about in that short 20 minutes, and low expectations for the investment on their time and the return. Think instead about how valuable is that person's physical health if you're setting up an appointment to talk with them about health challenges that you're aware they face when it concerns your product. And then if it's an appointment that you're setting to talk with someone about your business vehicle, how valuable is the financial wellness and peace of mind that could come from them achieving success with this particular business vehicle? You see, it's really important to not discount yourself. Yes, you want to be respectful of the other person's time, but you also want to be respectful of your own time. That means that you are owning the fact that you are involved in a sales business. And yes, I know we share stories and we share other people's stories if we don't have our own stories, but the reality is we are selling our products to other people, and sales is a professional occupation, and we need to treat it that way. And I think if you just start to listen differently to what you're saying when you're wanting to approach people, you'll find that some of the reason you're not getting a positive response is because you're going in with an expectation of a negative response. Because professional salespeople, they know how to respond even when the potential customer starts pressuring you for price. Even if they are going to go to that level and you're not ready, you can simply say something like, you know, we're competitive in our pricing. Our pricing is reasonable. However, that's not the reason our customers do business with us. You see, and it isn't, because customers can buy most products somewhere else. They do business with you because you want to learn about their issues and you want to meet those challenges. That's what you need to think about when you're concerned about how you're positioning yourself. Your prices are competitive, but that's not the ultimate reason that customers do business with you. It's not, because if price was the only issue, then people can generally find some substitute product that they can get for less dollars. So I want you to focus on making sure, one, that you're in front of the right customer, in front of a value-based person, not a transactional-based customer. And then think about why you need to not set yourself up for failure, but move on to understanding why it's important to simply share what you have to offer from a position of strength, okay? Because all of your prospects, all of your potential prospects, they can't be people who buy on price. If they are, then you need to find a different group of potential customers to be in front of. If you don't, you really are, on one side, setting yourself up for failure, but then on the other side saying, well, it's not my fault because all these people that I'm around, they can't afford my product and all they're concerned about is price. That indicates that you need to make a change in your lifestyle so that you are in front of people who are not focused solely on price and who can afford to buy your product. And I'm not saying that that's easy to do, to change your lifestyle group focus, but I know that it's absolutely necessary because it's been necessary for me. Since much of the work that I do is focused on people who may be living in shelters or transitional housing, or I may find myself for day after day after day only in places with people who have absolutely no money, who are at the sustenance level, they're basically trying to survive, then I can't say, well, TA, because you did that Monday through Thursday, then that's the reason why you don't have any new prospects, and so it's not your fault because you're out there and you're doing a good work. Well, but, you know, that's not going to work. That doesn't cut it, because if my goal is to build my business, then I have to incorporate somehow getting myself in front of people who can afford to buy my product and who are interested in that. Not to do that is to really delude yourself, and you don't do that when you're a professional. When you're a professional, you face it. These are my limitations. I'm doing this Monday through Wednesday. I'm here at the shelter. Then that means Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I have got to put myself in front of people for whom my business is a viable option. And that's what you all have to do as well, even if it means drastically changing your current lifestyle schedule. And for some of you, that's exactly what it's going to mean. But sometimes the challenge, I think, in the sales and marketing that we've been having is because we just don't want to make the commitment that's necessary to invest that much time in other people. And that's really what you have to do, because it requires keeping your word to those people, and it requires working that commitment into your daily schedule. Because customer loyalty, it doesn't just happen. You know, repeat sales are based on customer loyalty, and that only comes from customers who believe that they're your first priority. Again, back to Richard and his approach with his preferred customers. They believe they are his first priority. Why? Because they are his first priority. How does he show that? Because he writes them thank you notes and he follows up with them and he makes them feel important. When you think about where you are in terms of customer loyalty, when you go to a store or a restaurant or some place that you used to go to all the time and then you don't like it anymore, do you take the time to tell them why you do like it or why you don't ever return? I think if you ask yourself what you do in those situations, then you can easily transfer that to, will your customers tell you? You know, the people who purchased from you before, why haven't they purchased from you again? Did the product not work? Did they have an adverse reaction to it? Did they think the price was too high? Did they think the price was too low and therefore it wasn't valuable to them? Did they want to order again and they couldn't find you? What do your customers' activities tell you about the way they view your customer service? Because that customer loyalty, if you do any sort of research in the sales industry, you'll find that almost all businesses know that it is far more expensive to get a new customer. Some surveys that I looked at said up to 30 times more expensive than to keep a current one. Okay? And most consumers are no longer willing to be loyal to companies, this article says, that don't treat them the way they like to be treated or have come to expect to be treated. So if your customers don't trust that you will make the commitment necessary to follow up with them on the customer sales and give them current brochures, then why are they going to stick with you? And it's very unlikely that they're going to do that. But since we know that it's more expensive to get a new customer, then why don't we focus differently on the customers that we have? And I know some of you did the homework exercise and you made contact with some of your previous preferred customers, and many of you did not, though. And it doesn't matter personally to me whether you share with me that you did contact your preferred customers or you didn't. What really matters to me is that you go through the exercise so that you can see the true state of your business in terms of how you're caring for your customers, because that's going to answer for you why you're not having the level of success in the sales and marketing aspect of this business than you are. You know, it's like some of you are really, really nice to your customers to get that first sale, just like some of you are really, really nice to your distributors to get them to fill out their application, and then suddenly you don't have anything to do with them. It's like, you know, you get married to somebody and you stop doing all the nice things you did to get that person to agree to marry you. You know, it's not going to work very well, and for some of you in those situations, I'm sure you've learned that over time. But it's the same situation with our customers. We have to work at it, and we have to work smarter, not harder. Because you have to always think about what makes your sales and marketing approaches with your preferred customers and the potential customers that you meet, what makes you different from anyone else that they are receiving information from. And believe me, they're receiving information. They're bombarded by information in most areas of the country. So we'll figure that, I mean, it's a given that you have a good product. We know that. But it takes more than that. Ask yourself again, what does it take for you to stick with a store or to stick with a particular product? Again, how about reminder cards? We have the e-flyers that you can always send to someone. You can send a reminder card saying that I know that it's about time for your product to run out, and I just wanted to get your order placed so that you wouldn't have to do without it for any significant period of time. I prefer that you do these handwritten notes. You can use the email for some clients, but make sure, again, back to knowing the client, make sure that that client likes email. Some people don't like to receive emails because they reserve emails just for business stuff. Some people get so much junk mail, they don't want any more emails, even if they are positive. So before you decide to use an email with your customer, make sure that's okay with the customer. And if not, and in most cases, it's far better to send a personal note. Now, in order to do that, to use reminder cards, handwritten or via email, that means that, back to the commitment piece, you have to know the customer. You have to know what they ordered. You have to know when they ordered in order to know that it's time for a replacement order. You could do what many people have done and send them a preferred customer card. You just print it out on your computer and put your web address on it and your ATG 800 number. I find that many customers appreciate being able to call a toll-free number because many of our customers are long distance. So that's an added benefit. Your goal to keep your customers and to maintain their loyalty is to make life easier for them. If that means that you give them the 800 number, it means that you mail them their product, that you send new brochures when you get new ones, as we did after leadership school. Everyone should have sent the new brochures to their previous customers based on those customers' preferred customer profile, the products they were interested in, and where appropriate, since we had so many health and nutrition products introduced based on the health awareness survey that you had from those customers. And, of course, I know no one throws away their health awareness surveys because we've talked about that, and you keep that as a reference point so that you can do that immediate follow-up after leadership school and international convention and say something easy as, you know, I remember here on your health awareness survey you were interested in something else for energy, and I know you were using the B12, but I wanted to let you know that we just introduced this new product, and it's called Awake. And you can carry it with you. It comes in these nice, convenient little packets, and it's a very smooth feeling. No major jump up, and definitely no crash and burn. So I wanted to send you some information on this, and you're going to enclose the new brochure. But you can't do that if you didn't know what the person was concerned about on their health awareness survey, and you can't do that if you don't have your contact information on that individual to send the information to them. Because the thing about customer loyalty, it's not something that's reasonable, because loyalty is an emotion, okay? And the only way you nurture emotions is to build and honor that relationship, and that's what you have to do with your customer. And if you think that it's not worth it, again, I point you to Richard and to Bruce and to the Schaumbach, who were previous customer managers of the year for years in a row, okay? It is most definitely worth it to treat people the way they want to be treated. Again, it's just back to treating people the way you want to be treated. You want to be valued as a customer, and I'm just encouraging you to do the same with the people that you're working with. When you think about those stores who set the standard for customer service, like Nordstrom's and Lexus, that's what it's about. They send you invites to say, we're having this show on this Saturday, there's going to be hors d'oeuvres, we would like you to RSVP, but if you don't, that's okay. Why do they send you that? Because they know you were in the store during that same sale last year, so there's an expectation that you may want to come again. Now, if you don't go, are they going to send it to you again the next year? Yeah, they are. You know, they'll send it to you for a few years because they know that's more valuable to them than trying to get a new customer. One, because they already have your name, they already have your address, and they already have an indication of the type of items that you like to buy. Now, if they're not throwing away customers' information, then why are we, as distributors, throwing away our customers' information simply because they didn't make the second order, when most of the time they didn't make the second order because we didn't ask for the second sale? So if you're going to focus, and I hope you are, on becoming more proficient in the sales and marketing aspect with your customers, it still gets to the basic two of knowing your product and knowing your customer. Knowing your product is easy, as we've talked about, is simply reading the brochures, which of course means that you have to have the new brochures. And I would hope that everyone has ordered all of the new brochures that have been made available since leadership school. They're really well done brochures, very attractively made, very professional, and high quality. And you need to have those because those new products are not in your current Mall Talk, and they're not going to be in the Mall Talk for a while, since the Mall Talk probably won't be updated before international convention. So when you're contacting people, you're going to be sending out the Mall Talk, of course, with the new brochures included. And that's how you're going to do it. I don't want you to just send out the new brochures and not the Mall Talk, because they may want to order something in the Mall Talk that they hadn't seen before. So you want to make sure that you're looking at the new brochures and you have them. You also want to make sure that you read the sections in the career menu that talk about the product. It gives you very detailed information on how to market the product, what the features and benefits are, and then, of course, you're going to know your product because of personal use. And since it's not possible for you to have a story for every product, you're going to share information with one another, which is one of the reasons why we put the testimonials on the group website, so that you can also learn more about what the product does for different people, so that when you meet people in that category, you'll be better positioned to share your information with them. Okay? So those are the easy steps you can take to know your product better. In terms of knowing who your best customers are, that's important also, because the reality is all customers aren't created equal. When you look at sales and marketing research, one of the reports I looked at indicated that it's not unusual to find that over 30% of a typical company's customers are unprofitable when you consider all cost factors involved. Okay? They found that over 90% of the net profit might come from as few as 5% of the customers. So what are the patterns? Which customers do you have that present the greatest opportunity for increasing your revenue stream? And it's easy to do. I mean, I'm not asking you to go out and buy a fancy software program. All you have to do is do a general review of your past receipts. You ought to have your receipts in order anyway, because we already did the text call for getting your records done. And so you can simply look at your receipts and see. You have a stack of 10 receipts from one customer or 3 or 4 customers, and then another 5 stacked with just one receipt each. But it's going to tell you where you need to focus in order to identify who your best customers are. Now, when you identify who your best customers are, it's clear that you're not going to treat all your customers the same, and I'm not asking you to do that. But once you determine who your best customers are, I do want you to focus on strengthening that relationship, because gaining that additional share for that particular customer is going to be much more profitable than spending a lot of time with those who've only made one purchase a year ago. All right? And how can you do that? Well, as I mentioned, you can offer them toll-free ordering. You can offer them a referral coupon which is easy enough to do. You simply say, if you can give me 3 referrals, we'll give you $5 off your next purchase for every 2 people who buy. However you want to set it up, because you have to maintain and manage your own business finances, but people appreciate getting coupons. They appreciate being recognized, because that's really all you're doing. You're recognizing and appreciating the fact that they gave you a referral by offering to give them a coupon off of a particular product, if you choose, or simply off of their next sale. Now, when you're doing this, you're learning more about your customers, and it's going to take you some time to sit there and go through your receipts. It's going to take you even longer if you don't have your receipts together, so I hope most of you have yours together. Then you're going to choose, along with those receipts, I want you to develop the profiles of your best customers. What are their common characteristics, okay? And this is important, because what you're going to do after you identify the common characteristics in your customers' profiles, you're going to go out and you're going to find more customers just like those. And that means that you can simply go to the website, look at your preferred customer profile sheets, and this is obviously easier to do if you've registered all your customers as preferred customers. If you haven't, then you first need to take some time to get them in there, because then you can look and see, are many of your customers living in the same area? Do many of your customers have 3 children? Do most of your customers work outside the home? Do most of your customers stay-at-home parents? Identify the common characteristics in your best customers and then go find other customers like them. If you have 10 customers whose preferred customer profile says they order 5 to 7 products each month, that's clearly the profiles you want to focus on to find people like them. If you have someone who has 1 product in their house that comes from the company, then you don't necessarily need to focus as much on them. You can't spend all your energy on everyone. You have to choose. So first you have to know who your best customers are. And you can do that simply by conducting a general review of your past receipts. Then understand that you're not going to treat all these customers the same, and your best customers you're going to offer incentives, toll-free ordering, drop shipping, referral coupons. Then you're going to review the preferred customer profile sheets so that you can identify the common characteristics and then go find more customers like that. And the last aspect in terms of taking care of your best customers, you really want to make yourself indispensable to them. You want to be the one that finds their pain, because you're listening to what they say and provides the solutions. You want them to think about you as a solution-driven service. If someone in their house gets sick, the first thing they're going to think about is, I need to call TA because I know she's got something that will help with this. If someone is looking for part-time income, you want them to think, oh, I know this person. They have a lot of people working with them who wanted part-time income. Well, they can't know that about you unless you've built a relationship with them. And it takes time. I'm not saying it doesn't. But that's one of the reasons why we're having the challenges, is because we know at one level that it takes time, but we're not investing that time. But I want to assure you, if you take that time that's necessary, it's totally worth every single minute. You know, and if you want to, ask Richard, ask Bruce, ask the Shambox, ask people who are having success with the sales and marketing aspect of this business. Because the reality is, this business vehicle is product sales driven. And your goal is to help new people operate their business in the positive within 90 days. And I don't want you to just do this for your new people. I want you to do this for yourself. No matter what's going on with your business, whether you're activated or not, whether your people didn't do their renewals or not, you can still focus on the product sales aspect and bring your business into a positive financial state, but not without significant time and commitment. Because to do this, it takes awareness and acceptance that selling is a professional skill, and you can acquire the skill set necessary. I'm not saying you have to be the world's greatest salesman, but I am saying you have to focus on these elements that we talked about and develop them as much as possible given where you are. And at a minimum, you have to recognize how important they are. And when you think about the sales and marketing aspect, the reason why I wanted to tie this discussion from sales and marketing into the training aspect is because I think they go hand in hand. The one leads necessarily, I think, to the importance of training and knowledge challenges that we're facing. And when you think about it, what is training? The definition I found says it's to coach in or accustom to a mode of behavior or performance, to make proficient with specialized instruction and practice, to focus on or aim at. I especially like the to make proficient with specialized instruction and practice, because that's what we have to do with this particular vehicle, because this is not something that most of us were used to doing in the other areas of our life. Now, the skill set development is based on training, which leads to knowledge, which gives the experiences that we need to achieve success. You see? So that's the stair-step process. It's training leading to your knowledge, which leads to the experience, which leads to your success. And experience is easy. It's a familiarity, awareness, or understanding of something that we're involved in. It's specific information about something. It doesn't mean you have to be an expert. I'm not talking about you being an expert. I'm just talking about you being knowledgeable. The key, though, in the definition of experience is it's active participation. Active participation in events or activities leading to the accumulation of knowledge or a skill to participate in personally. And that's, I think, sometimes where we're struggling, because we really don't want to embrace, if you will, the absolute hard work component that's necessary to get to that level of success. And this really applies not just to developing the skills we need to be proficient in the sales aspect. It also applies to developing the skills we need to be successful in the prospecting and recruiting piece. Because I think there's a direct connect-the-dot relationship between what we're doing on the one side of our business with the sales and what we're doing on the other side with the prospecting and recruiting. When you think about it, we're not learning enough about our products to talk with people about them, and we're not learning enough about our business and listening to enough material and practicing enough to be able to talk with someone fluently about what our business vehicle has to offer. And since we're not comfortable enough to discuss it, when someone brings up the business, we shy away from it. Or we say something like, well, I'll get back to you later. And it's the same thing with the product. We say, well, I'll send you some information. And then we never do, because we don't know what we're going to do after we send the information and the person decides they have a question or they have some interest. And many times we don't prospect and recruit because we don't know what to do if the person says yes, if they say they're interested. And I wanted to share with you that when you're prospecting and recruiting, in some ways it is like you're hiring someone, even though they're not, it's not going to be that employer-employee relationship. And I saw something in a magazine that was talking about the importance and the challenge of hiring the right person, and I think some of it relates to why we don't want to learn what we need to learn in this business to prospect and recruit the correct people, but I also think that it shows you the dangers when you don't. And this was actually in the Network Journal. And they talked about a survey that was released last year that showed that 46% of new hires fail within 18 months of joining a company. That's 46%. Now, you figure out how these numbers relate to what's gone on in your particular organization, okay? So 46% of new hires fail within 18 months of joining a company. And then they surveyed 5,200 hiring managers who said only 11% of those workers lose their jobs because they don't have the proper skills. Only 11% lose their job because they don't have the proper skills. Instead, they lose their jobs because they aren't a good fit with the company. And they found that 26% failed because they couldn't accept feedback. They weren't coachable. 23% failed because they couldn't manage their emotions, and 17% failed because they lacked motivation, and 15% failed because they had the wrong temperament for the job. Now, that's pretty significant, but I think that translates directly into the problem that some of us are having in our organizations, because we've bought in these people. We knowingly bought in people who were not coachable. How did we know they weren't coachable? Because we asked them to read the Getting Started Action Guide before we signed them up, and they didn't read it, and we said, okay, well, I'll sign you up anyway, and you can read it later. How do we know they lacked motivation? Because we asked them to give us a names list, and they said that they couldn't think of anybody that they knew that could afford to do this business, and we let them come into business with us without getting that names list. and 15% fail because they had the wrong temperament for the job. How about those people we bring into our business who say, I don't want to sell any product, I'm not going to get in front of the room, and by the way, I don't want to go out of town for an out-of-state training. That's the wrong temperament for this business. Yet we're bringing these people into our business. And I think that we're bringing them in because of a lack of training and knowledge and experience on our part, so we're so anxious to get somebody in that we take anybody, not realizing that we would have been better off with nobody. So we need to think about developing this knowledge base on training to give us the experience levels that we need, and that applies whether we're figuring out how we're going to sell our products to people or how we're going to bring people into our business. And if you've been bringing people in that match these statistics, then there should be no surprise as to why you're having problems. Because the reality is, for all of you on this phone, you're successful elsewhere. I know you are. You have tremendous success in other areas of your life. And that's because of your ability to market yourself, to get people to know you, to like you, and to trust you, and to believe that you have the experience necessary to get the job done. And you do that with your family, you do that with your friends, you do that with your churches, you do that with your employers. The challenge and the question for me is why we won't consistently embrace the need for the same level of training with this vehicle and this new experience in our lives. Because this isn't something that we were born to do or we were raised doing. Think about it. With this business, we have the career manual, just like you have your manuals at work. We have brochures, just like I'm sure you have similar things at work. We have the NMTSS, where we have regularly scheduled trainings, just as most of us who have regular jobs have to go to periodic trainings. When I was in the military, if you wanted to get promoted, you had to go through the promotion manual, you had to read it, you had to do a good job, and you had to behave yourself. There weren't any secrets. It's the same thing with this business. You have to read the career manual, have the brochures, go to the trainings. There's really no secret. Being on conference calls is good. Obviously, I like conference calls. I encourage you to participate in them, but not to the exclusion of focusing on the training details that you need to build your business. The conference calls can't be your only vehicle. It can supplement it, but it can't be your only, because it's not possible for my conference call or anyone's conference call to cover every detail that's in the career manual. And you need every detail, because remember, it's not just the devil that's in the details. Success is in the details as well. So conference calls are good. Tapes are good. Second looks without a guest, you know, that's good too. But calling prospects is better. Showing the plan is better. Second looks with guests is the best. Okay? Time spent reading your career manual is critical. Going to the basic side, new distributor training and ECCT, going more than once is absolutely necessary, because you're going to keep learning different aspects based on where you are in the development of your business and based on the presentation of the material. So the repetitive component is so critical. That's why the company included it as part of the Unfranchised Owner program. In my legal world, ongoing training is absolutely critical. In fact, if I don't get sufficient continuing legal education credits within a certain period of time, then I lose my license to practice law. That's how serious they are about it, because it's important to ensure your currency and your ability to be accurate with people that you're dealing with. Just the same as with this business. How can we be out there showing people outdated brochures, therefore outdated product information, misleading, even if unintentionally, people about our compensation plan because we haven't read the material enough to understand what IBV really is about and how it's going to add to their ability to increase their revenue stream? It's the exact same for your customers. You want to be the answer person. Okay, that's good. But showing other people, especially your fellow business associates, where the answer is better. Okay, it's not about you becoming the expert. You want to be the go-to person for your customers, but you want to be the show-to person for your business associates, because you want to empower them to be able to look in that manual and feel comfortable with the answer that they're giving people even when you're not there, which is why I always start everyone with giving them a copy of the career manual until theirs comes in and the Getting Started Action Guide, because you want from the beginning to show them that they can be successful without having to depend on you. Think about these questions. Do you call corporate or your upline before you even look online for an answer or in the career manual? Do you answer without being sure of the facts just because people think you ought to know it, therefore you give them a response? You know, think about changing your focus and considering your training needs the way I have to do medical with my malpractice insurance, okay? So think about your training as malpractice insurance for the success of your goal achievement efforts. If you have that sound foundation and you know for sure what your cue date is and what the cue dates are of your personally sponsored people, then that's going to prevent loss of volume because you're going to make sure that their Form 1000 is in. If you know for sure what the dates are required for people to submit renewals, who has to submit them, and who does it based on when they became part of this business, then that's going to prevent loss of sponsorship. If you want to be sure that people have a commitment to this business, you have to give them the Getting Started Action Guide before you sign them up. Not at the time that you're sitting there going through the sign-up process. They have to have seen that before. How else do you know that they're willing to follow the steps that are necessary? Obviously, they could say they're willing before, and then they could change. But if you don't have the courage to ask them and require that before then that causes me some issues concerning your willingness to embrace the requirements of building a successful business. And if you were at risk for losing all of these things and losing your own franchise because of it, as I would lose my law license if I didn't stay current and accurate and on top of my training, then I think you'll understand how important it is to embrace this training. Because the more you embrace the training, the details of the training, the more you're going to secure your financial future with this vehicle. And the less time it's going to take you to keep going back and correcting it. It's one thing Robert used to say all the time whenever I was not doing what I needed to be doing. I know you can't believe I would ever not be doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But he always said, if you can't take the time to do it right, when are you going to have the time to do it over? And you're not, because you're busy with life and other things. So it's real important for you to take the time to focus on why you're having these challenges with your sales and marketing side. Why are you having the challenges with the training? And sometimes we're having those challenges because we just don't want to do the work. It's easier to pick up the phone and call me or someone else and ask the question. It's easier to send someone an email and ask the question. It's not that I don't want you to ask one another questions or even ask me questions, but I want you to know what the potential answers are. It's better if you say to me, hey, I looked in the career manual, and this is what it said about submitting the renewals. I'm a little confused with what it was saying. Can you explain it? That's different. That tells me that you are expanding your knowledge, and you're looking elsewhere for just reinforcement and confirmation of it, not looking elsewhere for the foundation, because no one can build your foundation except you. Because remember, the whole point of the training is to develop your confidence, your competence, and make you more capable. And you can't do that unless you own it inside, and you can't own it inside unless you've invested yourself in it. And that means investing the time that's necessary to read the career manual, to read the brochures, to understand your customers. Some of you couldn't tell me who your last 10 customers were. With the homework exercise where you were supposed to go back to your customers, some of you couldn't find your customers because you didn't keep receipts and you hadn't registered most of your customers into the database. Now, and I'm glad you shared that with me because you need to know where you are in order to make the necessary changes. But clearly, those changes need to be made because to do otherwise is to say that you're not accepting the reality of the need for sales skills in this business or the importance of ongoing training until. And it's ongoing training until you and your organization have achieved every goal that you set. It's not ongoing training until you're at this pin level and then ongoing training until you're at this pin level. It's ongoing training until you get goal achievement for you and those in your organization who are willing to work towards it the same as you are. And if you can do that, you'll be amazed at what a major difference it's going to make in your ability to succeed. Plus, you're just going to feel better. You're going to feel better because we always feel better when we know what we're talking about, when we're not just, we're walking the walk, yes, but we're talking the talk, and it's ours. It's not mimicking someone else. It's not puppetry. Okay? We can say the words, and yes, they may be the same words that someone else said, but we own them because we know the level of training and experience that's behind those words. That's the difference, okay? That's what I want you to focus on over these next couple of weeks in terms of seeing where you are in these areas and what you can do differently to get yourself to a new level.